Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. How you all doing? It's been a bit of a while since I've recorded. I've had a fair few in the back pocket, but I'm just entering into a few weeks where I've got loads, and honestly, I've got so many exciting guests coming your way. And this is very much one of those as well. Today's guest is Louis Elliott. And I first discovered Louis' music in Kinky Machine way back in the early 90s when he came and played my beloved Pink Toothbrush. And then later on, I saw him play multiple times in Rialto. Rialto are back. They've played some shows, and I won't say too much because we talk about what's happening with Rialto at the end. I mean, we should also say, in the meantime, for 13 years, Louis's been playing guitar for Grace Jones. We touch on that. I mean, that's a pretty cool gig. So there's loads to be discussed, and Louis's chose some fantastic records, so you're in for a real treat on today's episode. If it's your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, then hello. You're very late to the party. Well over 500 episodes in there. And well, you've missed episodes with, oh, blimey. If you like your big sort of orchestrated mid-90s fantastic pop, then you listen to my chat with Jake Shillingford from My Life Story. The Vessel from David Devont and his Spirit Wife. These were the bands that I was going to see when I was going to see Rialto as well. But yeah, if you like your big indie bangers, check out my tracks, my chats with The Killers, The Kooks. If you like your hip-hop, go listen to my chats with Yellow Wolf or Chuck D, a Public Enemy. Your big ballsy rock bands like Tommy Lee from Motley Crue or Foo Fighters. I've had some fantastic comedians from the likes of James Acaster to Ed Gamble to Maisie Adam. I've had some superstar DJs like Fatboy Slim. Who else have I had on? I mentioned producers. Butch Vig, that fella that produced Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins, Sonic Youth, the list goes on. Recently, I've just had a fantastic chat. He came back on for a second episode with Frank Carter, formerly of Gallows and now of the Rattlesnakes. Had a lovely chat with Frank. So, go get stuck in. Have a little root around in that archive because there's 500 episodes, well, over 500 episodes to you that are all free that you can enjoy wherever you get your podcasts from. So when you finish with Louis' episode today, go have an explore. And let me tell you how else you can support this. This is the bit that, well, I guess a lot of you just whiz past now. It's called Patreon. And it's like a kind of sort of crowd support thing. I charge $1 a month. So I think that converts to about 80 pence. Let me tell you what you get for 80p. And I know you're thinking, oh man, have I got to go and sign up to something? Literally, it takes 30 seconds. You just go over there, put your name and your email in. There's a little video when you get there of my silly face telling you like all the stuff you're going to get. So I can tell you now what you're going to get. So you get to watch all the episodes. I put all the videos up over on Patreon, so you can watch them with no adverts, just that none of this waffle either. You don't even get the intros. It's just bang, straight into the chat. You get access to hundreds and hundreds of never released episodes, hundreds and hundreds of radio shows I've done, and you also get to come to the monthly live hangout on, it's like a live show essentially, but we do it over Zoom, and basically everybody just pops up on their Zoom. You can have your camera off if you want your camera off and just watch, or it's your opportunity to get stuck into the show. So we recorded one night before last, and we done our favourite film scores and soundtracks, and that can kind of lead you to think it might be a little bit wanky and a little bit, oh, is this going to be sort of indie snobbery? Not at all. Like, not at all. It's lovely. It's a really wonderful bunch of girls and guys, and we just have a lovely little natter for an hour about great records and memories attached to records and guilty pleasures, if you like to call them that. And you can find out all about that at Patreon. That's patreon.com/offthebeatandtrackpodcast. Beat and, not being. Or you can just go to the website. That's got everything. You can find all the socials over there, and that's just offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Big thanks to the team at Blue Murder Club. They produce this podcast. Go check out their podcast, Fantastic True Crime Pod, and you'll recognise some of the guests because they've been on this pod. I've even turned up and guested on that one. Big thanks to Mr. Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. And obviously, last but not least, before we get on with this episode, the biggest love and thanks go to you lot. Thanks ever so much for your ongoing support for over 500 episodes. I hope you're enjoying these chats. I'm still enjoying them. I'm still loving recording these chats. It's so much fun to get to talk to people that are passionate about music and to get, you know, to be nosy, to ask them questions about how they got into this stuff. So anyway, you know all this anyway. So let's just get on with today's show. Please enjoy Off the Beat and Track podcast with the delightful Louis Elliott of Rialto.
It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we are recording. Louis, how are you today?
Very good, thanks. Yeah, I'm just going to try and get rid of this. There we go. Yeah, hi.
Wonderful, wonderful. Where, I mean, it looks like you're at home. Where's home these days?
It's in London, in sort of kind of near between Dalston. Well, I won't say exactly where it is, but
I don't need the postcode. Everyone just popped around Louis now. Right. Well, look, thanks ever so much for giving up your time today, mate. And I'm really looking forward to having this chat today. But I kick things off the same way of every podcast. And Louis, can you tell me the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please?
I've chosen Sound and Vision. And I think it's kind of because, you know, it's a fantastic song in itself. And it's one of those songs that I think it's such a strong song that I think I liked it before I even heard it. You know, I heard somebody sing it as a kid. I heard somebody sing it in the toilets at school. An older boy was singing it. Blue, electric blue. And I was like, that's great, you know. Yeah. And then I got to hear the real thing and stuff. But, you know, I think that in itself is incredible, that it's got that power to translate on a level where you don't even have to hear the record. It's that good a tune and that good a lyric. But also... But it's also fantastic. You know, there's a lot of songs that have good intros, but this one, and some songs that have good intros, that it sort of sets up the rest of a great song. But this one, it's great in itself. The intro goes on for, I don't know how long, minute, 2 minutes or something. And it's fantastic in itself. It's a great listen, even. And then the vocals come in, it's like, wow, it gets better, you know? So, I love that. I love that. And I think it's about, you know, the song's about quite a dark period, Bowie, I think. And yet it's got some sort of lightness about it, you know, which I love.
For me, it's like the payoff comes with that little, when the synth line comes in that intro. It's just beautiful. And I'm interested because you did send an honourable mention over as well for this, which is far more instant. And I don't know if you want to sort of shout that one out as well, Louis.
Dude, I think I suggested as well the Jackson 5. I Want You Back.
Yeah. I mean, that don't mess around, does it? That's straight to it.
It's like straight in, isn't it? It's great. You know, and I'm still, you know, I must have heard that, you know, before I don't think I was aware of it when it came out, but I heard it when I was very young. And it's still, I don't know if it's cool or not. It's just great to me. It's just joy. You know, it's pure joy. And yeah.
Two very different intros there, Louis. And, you know, with Sound and Vision, it's that kind of journey to get the payoff of when Bowie's voice kicks in and such, whereas the Jackson, it's bang straight from the off. So I'm interested in you as a songwriter to kind of get, because when Kinky Machine come out, when Rialto come out, the way that people were getting their music was way different to how people get their music now. So, you know, I watch how my kids get their music, and it's, you know, they're coming to me with records that I just think, hang on, that was when I was young, and it's, oh yes, gone off on TikTok. And obviously we're seeing, I guess, a majority of people utilising streaming services like Spotify and such, where rather than trying to get your track on the evening session, you want to be on the right playlists on Spotify and stuff like that. And I'm interested to know how many of these kind of trends and movements in how people get their music filter through into your creative process.
Only in as much as I suppose I'm, you know, my kids play me stuff, my son plays me stuff that I wouldn't have come across otherwise, and introduces me to artists, you know, from hip hop to sort of Taylor Swift, you know, and what I think is great, what I do think is great about streaming, one of the few, you know, there are a lot of bad things about it, but I think one of the great things is this sort of democratization of the listening sort of experience or whatever, you know, it's like you've got it all, you can have anything you want. And I think that has made kids and people less bothered about the chronology of music, and it's just about whether it's any good. And that's, you know, I find that quite encouraging, that it's, you know, I think growing up, it was all about, unless a record was hugely successful and was hanging around the charts for ages, you're not really likely to find it a few months after it's come out, because whatever, I don't know what they did with them, they sent it back to the record, you know, they were sold out, they didn't sell out, maybe they went back to the label or got, I don't know what happened, but there wasn't the space to have much
Absolutely.
More. So everything had this kind of this momentary thing, which was cool in a way, but in another way, I think it was it's a shame, because all these things felt slipped through the cracks and were lost. And at least there's a potential to find them now. And kids, well, all of us kind of, you know, discover stuff that perhaps we wouldn't have before.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please, Louis.
This is a hard one because there are so many, you know, and there's sort of early childhood memories of, you know, and I thought, first of all, there's a song called Sympathy by Rare Bird that my dad used to play, which is, I think, came out in the late 60s. And it's quite a sort of, I haven't ever listened to it. And I can see how it sort of informed my own writing, particularly melodically. But it's a bit of a sad song. And I suppose that hit me because it romantic, you know, I wasn't too young to sort of understand any sort of romantic kind of stuff going on in lyrics, but that just seemed to I understood what it was about. It was about empathy and everything. And but actually the one I've chosen is Let Him In by Wings, because I love that still. And I remember, you know, I remember being in my friend's back garden with him. We were fixing his bicycle, then we were trying to fix a puncture. The sun was out. I think, I guess it was 1976. I was very you know, I'm old, but I was pretty young still then, and it was a very hot summer, and I just remember that song. It was a very happy moment, but that elevated it even more, I think, and it's still a, you know, it's still a cracking tune to me.
So to pinpoint that emotion, it would have been happiness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You mentioned there that the other track that you said your dad would play. Like, tell me a little bit about home growing up, and was it a musical house?
My dad's taste on the whole was more things like Al Green, Marvin Gaye, more, you know, what we might call soul or R&B now, but all that 60s and 70s stuff, really. My mum's, and I loved all of that, and my mum's taste was much more Dylan, Van Morrison, you know, Neil Young, stuff like that. And they had quite separate, I had sort of quite separate sort of split upbringing, I guess. And so I would get, you know, different things in
I mean, you're getting the best of both worlds right there.
I think I was very lucky in many ways. That's one of them. Yeah. Definitely, you know, you know, I think it took me a while to get Dylan, but it was always there, you know. I mean, I remember we my mum was such a, and still is such a Dylan freak, that we camped on the pavement to queue for tickets to see him, you know, with a long line of sort of unwashed other folks. And I wonder if that was 76 as well, because it was hot. But yeah, I definitely I had it. And I also had a lot of encouragement, particularly from my mum. As soon as I was interested in doing music, my mum was very, you know, got me an acoustic guitar pretty swiftly.
And as much as, you know, there was all that, you know, the kind of, I guess, the sort of folk influence and more of the, I guess, the more serious kind of singer-songwriter stuff like Van Morrison and Dylan and such. But could you, I mean, can you see it now, like the influence of the kind of the Motown and the soul stuff and the sort of pop sensibilities of that as filtered through into your songwriting?
I would say so. I would say I'm interested. I think I've always, whether I admitted it at times or not, I've always just been interested in writing a good pop song, you know, a good tune that you can carry with you without actually having to play it, you know, and I'm still trying to write that thing, you know, and so I'm sure all of that did. Yeah, you're right. My dad's taste probably involved things that were more sort of 3-minute based, you know, and mine might have been a bit more rambling, but there's a poetic side to stuff that my mum liked that I think had some influence on me, in that I just felt like, okay, lyrics can be, you know, lyric, there can be a certain depth to lyrics that maybe you can get more out of them the more you listen to them, rather than just sort of first take.
Yeah. Let's stay in the formative years. Tell me the song, please, for track 3, Louis, that reminds you of your time at school.
This is a hard one because it is a hard one because, but I think I've chosen Pretty in Pink by the Psychedelic Furs. The original version, there was a terrible version that came out like about 6 years after that, I think. But I think there's something about them that at the time I liked this. There was a kind of mystery to them. There was a kind of devil may care kind of thing in his voice. He sounded sort of intelligent, but I didn't really know what he was on about. They maybe sounded like they were going to the kind of parties that I wish I was going to, or, you know, it was sort of, and there's a sort of dissonance as well. It's a pop song really, but there is a dissonance and the guitar playing and some of the other stuff, and I think that offsetting the prettiness with something that's a little bit more kind of edgy appealed to me. And yeah, I think it's, you know, that's something that I don't really listen to now, but if it came on, I'd think of of my youth and mates who also like that and stuff.
He looked and moved like a pop star as well. He looked so cool.
Didn't he? I mean, now I can see the Bowie influence. At the time,
massive, yeah.
I didn't notice it.
Yeah. You know?
But they definitely had something. I think before, I mean, they had some great, well, you know, at that point, I think they were quite an arty sort of band. And, you know, I think I came across them through some older kids who played the record or whatever. But that wasn't, at that point, that wasn't going to get on Radio One, you know, but it still had enough kind of pop sort of melody or whatever it was to you know, an attitude that to grab me. And years later they re-recorded it for an American big teen movie. I think it's called Pretty in Pink, which I never saw, but the recording of it was atrocious in my
it's a bit more shiny, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I by that time, I guess I was sort of over them anyway, but you know, and now, but I can remember hearing that and just thinking, oh my God, that is absolutely awful. I'd moved on. Having said that, you know, they had, I mean, Love My Way is another time.
I literally saw the videos to that about 3 days ago, and that's what, as soon as you said that, that's what made me think, in that video where he's dancing around, he just looks so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I liked the artwork of that album, and I think they I suppose they straddled a few different things. It was sort of new wavy, but it had I don't know, whatever it was about them. I still think that's a great tune, actually. When I hear Pretty in Pink, it's still got that magic.
Absolutely. Did you enjoy school, Louis?
Not really. I think I was, from a very young age, I was very, you know, from my sort of, from the age of about 9 or 10, I think I was playing the guitar, and really that was what I was interested in. And I was interested in going to art college because I thought that was where I would meet other musicians to get a band with. And so academic stuff, you know, wasn't really the whole, I think I was happiest in those years. I was happiest sort of actually in the bathroom playing the guitar, because the acoustics were good.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I think life sort of opened up, I think, much more after school for me, I would say. Yeah.
Was there ever any kind of other options that you was considering, or was music always the focus? I mean, what did you tell the careers officer? What did you tell the careers officer?
Well, I studied graphic design, but my heart wasn't in it really, and I sort of I had my sight from the age of about 12. I had a plan in my head. I was going to finish school, and I was going to go to art college. I was going to get a band together. I was going to get a record deal. Which actually, all of it.
I was going to say.
All of it happened.
Yeah,
it was the next day. I should have made a plan for the next day. but yeah, so I was pretty, you know, I was unwavering, really. I was unwavering to the extent that I think other friends of mine probably at times thought, why is he staying in doing some music when he could be out doing this or that?
Was you confident?
I wasn't hugely confident. No, I don't think I was. I think I was. I wasn't actually. And learning the guitar, I had this fantastic.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare.
PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Teacher for a couple of years from the age of about 10 to 12 or 11 to 13, something like that, who was in the band Hawkwind, and he lived not far away, and we just found his number in a local music shop. Didn't know who he was, but I clicked with him. His name's Hugh Lloyd Langton. He passed away sadly a few years ago. He was in Hawkwind and actually had taken some time out, and I think he's had a really bad acid trip and sort of walked away from the band for a bit. But I clicked with him. He was a really sweet, lovely guy. And that was my thing that I think I looked forward to the most every week, was going around to his flat. And I'd had a couple of lessons at school, or maybe a term of lessons, and they had tried to teach me things that I wasn't interested in learning. And whereas with you, he was like, okay, what do you like? You know, and we would just learn old songs or something about the Specials or, and we didn't have to say a lot, you know, I suppose, you know, sometimes people talk about that with school teachers, though, that there's somebody that kind of gets them. And I think Hugh kind of got me without really saying very much. He made me feel good.
Where was all this happening, Louis? Where was home and school?
That was in London, in my mum's house. I was in Ladbroke Grove.
Like fond memories of growing up around London?
Very, very much so, yeah. And, you know, that was a nice, you know, there was, you know, we had a lot of people would come around to the house, some musicians and stuff. People would sort of pass through quite a lot, but people might stay for a bit, you know. School wasn't really a priority for my mum. She probably wouldn't like me to say this now, but, you know, I think she allowed me to focus on things that weren't academic. No, I might stay up late playing the guitar, and that was all right. And actually, sometimes I didn't even go to school the next day because of that. Mm. But, you know, later on, you know, I'd wanted to go to art school, and when I got to art school, I think there was a slight, because I had already had a sort of network of friends and musicians. I already had a little band in London. When I went to art school, I didn't really connect in the way that I thought I would. And I you know, I had a band, I had a few people that I was playing with. And so my focus still was really on music. But I was sort of thinking, this is the thing that will please my dad, certainly getting it, you know, graphics degree or whatever. But
tell me the first song you remember buying from a record shop, please, Louis.
That again is very difficult to recall. I really find it quite difficult to recall. I don't know whether it was like a, you know, when I was very young, I was quite into a sort of like rock and roll, 50s kind of rock and roll and stuff that I heard through, you know, going back to my fixing the bicycle with my friend in his garden, his mum was a big Elvis Presley fan, and so that would often be playing. And so I think that definitely had some influence. But I can't remember buying those records. Maybe I had some that were bought for me. And then the big sort of boom in things I liked, contemporary stuff, was the sort of two-tone kind of movement. But I'm trying to think of an actual moment of buying a record, and actually one came to mind, which was a Curtis Mayfield record. And this is actually, I was like 15 or 16 by this time. And I'd heard Move On Up, covered by The Jam, mm-hmm. and subsequently heard Curtis Mayfield's version, and just thought, God, I've got to hear more of this. And I think, you know, it's going back to that thing we were talking about before. You couldn't really, you know, without streaming services, you finding these things was quite difficult. And I went to the Record and Tape Exchange looking for Move On Out and the record and the album, Curtis, the album that it's on. You know, I didn't, anyway, they didn't have it, but they had Back to the World, which I thought, well, I'll get that. And, I loved everything about it. I loved the cover. It had this sort of screen printed, sort of collage-y sort of cover. And then and the first song, it's called Back to the World, and it's actually it's quite a serious subject matter. It's about a guy in Vietnam, and he comes back to America, and there's nothing for him there. It's a very sort of welcoming reception, you know, having sort of been out fighting for his country, or sort of, you know, risking his life or whatever. But I think, you know, what's so brilliant and beautiful about that record, and about a lot of Curtis Mayfield actually, is this sort of ability to sound joyous and, you know, have quite serious, it's a protest song.
Yeah.
But joy. It's not earnest. It's so listenable. It just pulls you in, and it's got this magic. I love that. I love that record. I still do. But I also remember, I love that tune so much, and it's the first tune that I barely got through the rest of that side. And I'd taken one night, I was tripping very extremely, just on magic mushrooms. I must have been 15 or 16 or whatever. And I'd been with friends, I think. Anyway, I was back at my mum's. I guess she wasn't there, because it was light. It must have been 5 a.m. or something. And I put on this record, which I thought, you know, so happy and joyous. And I was very, very happy. And I was lying in bed. And I guess I sort of drifted off. And when I came round, it had got to the end of that side. And at the end of that side, it's got a song called Right On For The Darkness. Mm. And the end, Right On For The Darkness, is the most tense sort of orchestral, dark kind of weird, it's not joyous. It's pretty heavy. And I just came round to that, and I was like, and it just seemed to go on forever. And I was like, I just thought, I couldn't understand what was going on, because I thought, I've never heard this before. I've never, like, what's going on? And time seemed to stand still. Anyway, I guess the long and short of it is that it put me off tripping, but it didn't put me off Curtis Mayfield.
Yeah, yeah. Curtis Mayfield's got a fantastic song called Tripping Out, actually.
It's
a fantastic record.
Yeah.
You referenced the album cover. And then you also referenced Two Tone, and you mentioned you studied graphic design, and the branding around Two Tone was fucking ridiculously cool. That Curtis Mayfield sleeves, so slick. And I just was interested, because the thing that I loved about Two Tone was just the sort of consistency of branding. And when we talk about the pros and cons of streaming services, I think one of the things that's lost, and I've referenced this a few times, is the album artwork. And when you pick up them coffee table books of the greatest sleeves of all time, there's nothing on there from the last 10, 15 years, because it kind of, I guess, went with the CDs. And what I liked to reference Rialto now, was the consistency, and it all looked, you know, for me growing up with the Smiths and the two-tone thing, I liked things that were like uniformed, and it felt there was that consistency. Did you have input in that?
No, that came. I mean, you know, we work with people, but it was a that came. You know, I was very aware of the need to, yeah, to just focus in on. I sometimes think that the difficulty, perhaps, you know, growing up was like, not, you know, you're blowing about in the wind, not wondering what you're going to be, what sort of music are you going to do, what's your thing, and it takes a while to sort of just go, okay, I can bring all these things into this one funnel, and I hope we did that with Rialto, but yeah, it was an important thing, and yeah, I think I agree, all that two-tone stuff was fantastic, and it made you feel, you know, without it being exclusive remotely, it was the least exclusive movement, but it kind of gave you a badge to wear, you know, that it was that sort of specific visually.
And I think another thing that I liked about that and the bands on that, and I think, you know, I was looking today at some sort of press shots of Rialto in there. You look like a gang. And I think that's so important in bands. I think you look back at the Specials, you look back at Dexys and Madness and all of them sort of formative years, and they look like a gang. And like, and I think that's such an important, for me, I love that. Do you know what I mean?
I do. Yeah, I do. And I think specific, you know, particularly when you're growing up as a certainly as a boy, you have some of those kind of that you want to be part of the gang, you know, want to be part of that gang, and there's a, you know, I kind of had that with the Clash a bit, I suppose, as well. They felt like that. Sometimes the music was good, sometimes it was a bit patchy, but there was something about them being a proper gang. And I think, you know, a song that I loved growing up as well actually was Stay Free by the Clash, which is a kind of song version of that, of what we're talking about, in a way, which is not a romantic, it's not a song about love, it's a platonic song about a male friend, which is quite a rare thing to write about and also to get away with. But I think Mick Jones did that absolutely brilliantly, and
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
I'm all for that.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of gang thing and that sort of knowing what your look is about. Cool.
Let's go clubbing. Louis, tell me the song that soundtracked your years in clubs.
I mean, I'm still going. That is really difficult because my probably my favourite club ever was a club called Smashing, which was ran sort of for the first half of the 90s probably. And it ended up for a couple of years at least in a fantastic venue off Regent Street called Eves, and it had this sort of lit up dance floor, and it was like a forgotten venue that, you know, had been some kind of something that had been left over from, I guess, the 70s or something. And they played a completely eclectic mix of music. But the first sort of clubbing thing that I got into, I suppose, was places like the WAG in London and the Warehouse Parties and Finger Pop and sort of,
what was happening at the WAG then?
Well, right? there was a mixture of stuff, but I think the thing that I'm talking about, the clubs that I was drawn to, or certainly sort of just sort of seemed to get caught up in the kind of music that I felt attached to and drawn to, or whatever, or ended up with friends, was what then became known as Rare Groove. And it was all these sort of records from things that hadn't been very big hits, and the DJs found these old, basically kind of funk records from the early 70s, mainly, and late 60s. I felt, you know, I had some interest in that sort of music anyway, but it seemed to be quite an inclusive sort of movement, and it was just pre sort of acid house and stuff. I suppose it was that age where I was just starting to go out to clubs, so I picked this song, Cross the Tracks, which seemed to be played at a lot of those kind of parties. Some parties, sometimes Warehouse Parties, sometimes regular club nights at the Africa Center in Covent Garden. It was probably quite a brief moment of a year or two, I suppose. And then it was just prior to the sort of explosion of house music and stuff, which I also would club, you know, throughout that. My brother was really into acid house, and we did a lot of we went all over the place to sort of illegal rave sort of things, where you meet at the service station and stuff, and pretty mobile phones, really. It's like pull up a number and you'd be somewhere in, you know, wherever it might be, somewhere. We'd end up in Coventry or under a flyover in Bristol, or I don't know. But I didn't really connect with that club scene as much as the one that I really connected to was the one I started talking about first, which was Smashing.
Yeah.
Met a lot of friends there, and it felt like a place where anything could be played, and there were no really extended remixes or anything like that. It was sort of, everything felt like it was on a 7-inch.
Yeah.
And it might be a film soundtrack, or it might be a new wave record, or it might be a disco record, or it was pop music, really, I guess, in a kind of unashamedly sort of eclectic way. But it was very difficult to pick a song from that because it was so eclectic.
Yeah.
And Cross the Tracks sums up that sort of late 80s kind of period when I first started going.
And as somebody that's been a club promoter for 30 years, to have a night where you can play whatever you want and have the success that Smashing had.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not easy to do. And that's still the goal. If you can have that night where there is no genre, you can just play fucking great records from wherever.
Yeah.
I don't know if that'll ever happen again. I don't know. For me, club culture is so different there. And yeah. I mean, what do I know? I'm a 50-year-old man, but I still work in clubs, at, you know, every week, and I just, yeah, I'd give anything to be able to have a night where you can do that, and it be.
I think the magic of that club for me anyway was partly the music, but it was also, it just happened to be a sort of meeting of lots of different people, and you know, and I don't know how I heard of it, you know, but it seemed to just attract some like-minded people. There were quite a few people from bands that went there. There were just, you know, interesting people that maybe weren't dressing exactly, you know, in the most. It felt like it had a lot of individuals and a kind of very inclusive sort of atmosphere. So I think it was the people that ran it that brought this special thing as much as the music, you know. Yeah. And there was silliness to that as well. Like, you know, there was a silliness at that club, and they'd had live bands sometimes, and it just felt. I'm not a club promoter, but I guess it's about making people feel like they're having a bit of a party, and it's a social. The music wasn't, you know, there were booths. The music wasn't so loud that you couldn't talk. You could definitely meet and chat to people, and it's that feeling like you could probably talk to anybody in there because you're all part of the, you know, a similar sort of like-minded kind of outlook.
Absolutely. I'm interested. Obviously, I touched earlier on asking you, you know, about confidence, and obviously post Rialto, you've made a lot of music. You've been part of some incredible bands, touring with some absolute legends as well. Would you say you're driven?
Yeah, I'm definitely driven to make what I'm doing good, whether that way, you know, on whatever level that is. I want it to be good. I definitely want it to be good. I don't feel like I'm massively brilliant at you know, I've been involved with the festival quite a long time, promoting and stuff, and all booking and curating is an awful word for it, but that's kind of what my job was. I, you know, that was related, I guess, to music in some ways. I think that whatever I'm working on, yeah, I have a sort of a quite a perfectionist kind of thing going on. Yeah, you know, even if I'm just doing a top gig, I want to be good.
Yeah, I'm going to take you home for track 6. Favorite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Okay, so. I spent most of my life in London, but I'm also, my dad's side of the family's from Cornwall, and I spent, you know, quite a long time there as well, on and off. There are so many London artists that I thought I'd pick a Cornish artist, and I was quite surprised, and it's a bit tenuous, but Andy Mackay from Roxy Music. I've never been a massive fan of Roxy Music. I've got more into them recently, actually. He's from Cornwall. There are about 5 people from bands from Cornwall. I think Roger Taylor from Queen, Aphex Twin, maybe I should have picked him. There aren't many, though. But I did recently discover that he was from a place called Oswego.
Yeah.
So I've picked that partly as a kind of... Partly, I picked "Love Is a Drug" by Roxy Music, and that's also partly for me to mention what you've just mentioned is playing with Grace Jones, who does a version of that, and it's I guess I love that song because I get to play it with Grace. I love the Roxy version, but I really love playing with Grace Jones, and I love seeing her do that tune, and she puts on the glittery bowler hat and they have a laser light on her head, and you know, it doesn't get much more fun than that, playing the guitar, than having somebody like that as your sort of a band leader.
Yeah, it gets no cooler than that. I mean, how did that gig come about?
It came about through, as many things do, it's more than one one thing happening, isn't it? I mean, you know, it was a combination of things from playing. I mean, the most exciting, the best version I can tell you is that I was playing at a wedding, and it was my cousin's wedding. He's in music as well. The wedding band was, as at a lot of other weddings, family members or whatever, or mates who can play. It was just, it was a bunch of mates playing some songs. But Grace Jones happened to be coming to the wedding, and we had pull up to the bumper ready to go. And we thought, wouldn't it be amazing if Grace got up and did it? I think we front-loaded our set so that, you know, so that we'd sort of get her interest and sort of see her there. And anyway, it happened. She jumped up and sang Pull Up to the Bumper with us. And
mate, you're going to all the right weddings. Jesus, man.
I mean, it's all like that. If they were, I'd have played with many other. It was amazing. It was amazing. I was beaming. The tent was jumping. It was just like, this is the most fun ever. And so I let that be known afterwards. I knew a producer, and I knew a couple of people in the band. I'd previously been in a band with, in my late teens, I'd very briefly been in a band with a couple of the guys who are in Grace's band. I put it out there. If you ever need a guitar player, thought nothing of it. About 4 or 5 years later, they did. And I guess those little things just fell into place, and they asked me, and it was sort of 2 days rehearsal and you're off to Australia. Luckily I had a fair amount of time to do some homework before and learn my stuff. And I've been with her ever since, and that was 13 years ago. So
fantastic.
Yeah, it was a real lucky one.
Absolutely. Right, it's your last track, and this is where you get to be tastemaker, or as the young uns call it, influencer. Tell me a song that you think many of my listeners may not know that you would like them to hear, please, Louis.
Well, I've chosen Children of the Empire by Wise Blood. Now, I looked it up on Spotify, and actually it's had countless millions of streams, so maybe everybody does know it, but I don't know what that means these days, how many streams you've got.
Yeah.
Certainly, I've introduced her music to other friends of mine, and they've not heard it before. But I love her stuff, and I suppose I'm always drawn to things that have a sort of almost like a dichotomy within them. If that's the right word, meaning, you know, there's a kind of jauntiness to some of her music, and it's really melodically interesting, and chords wise, it interests me, or it grabs me, because it's not sort of it. Takes you on a journey, but there's some melancholy in the lyrics, but it's that mix of the melancholy and sort of joyousness that she's got, and I can listen to her all day and all night.
Fantastic. Well, we make it easy for people to go and check that out, and all the other songs that you've chosen, Luke. We put together a little Spotify playlist to accompany the pod, and obviously your music will be on there as well. So let's talk your music. So Rialto, they play shows, and there's shows coming, right?
Yeah, we've got the next one is the next London one is okay. Manchester is the 3rd of April at the Deaf Institute, and we're going to play at the Moth Club in London 5th of April. We just played a show a couple of weeks ago in London that was sold out in a flash, which was really, I don't know what the word is, pretty great for us. I mean, it was lovely. You know, it was a very nice feeling. It's been really, really fun revisiting those songs and actually playing a couple of new ones in the set. And the response has been really good. And yeah, so, it feels like the time to be doing it, and it seems to be I think there's many years where I wouldn't consider doing it, but it feels like the right thing at the moment. And it's,
how did it come about then?
We've been approached over the last few years by a couple of different promoters about playing, and somehow there wasn't really, it, you know, I guess it just took them knocking on the door a few times to actually go, for us and me to go like, actually, you know what, that might be fun. And it's coincided with me writing some new songs that I thought, okay, these songs are more Rialto than anything I've written before, since the original records. So it all just seemed to tie in. It seemed like, okay,
what's going to happen with them new songs? You going to record them?
Well, they've gone down well at the shows, and there's been a bit of recording going on. And,
wonderful.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I think, you know, touch wood, there might be something new on the horizon.
And so does your touring schedule with Grace allow for some festival shows for Rialto this year?
Yep, it does. And I think, I hope I can kind of juggle those two quite easily, you know. Luckily Grace isn't a sort of back-to-back touring person, you know. She likes to do a show and then take a little, you know, she's certainly not a sort of six nights a week artist, and we'll see what the demand is for Rialto, but so far it's been really it's been very nice.
That's lovely to hear, mate. Louis, if people want to keep up to speed with what you're doing and I guess essentially Rialto at the moment, where's the best place to keep up to speed with tour dates and such?
So there's for those people that are on Instagram, there's Rialto Official, Rialto Official. There is my own Instagram, which is just Louis_Elliott1L1T. And then there's a rialtomusic.com website with all our dates on as well. The usual places really, but yeah, Facebook and Instagram, you can find us. And the Instagram has, I think they've both got links to all the other stuff as well.
Wonderful. And yeah. If it's cool with you, I'll tag you in it when this episode drops, so the listeners, if they're not following you already, can go and do so and get along to the shows. I will 100% be at the Moth Club and I can't wait to see it. I'm going to press stop, Louis, but don't go anywhere. There you go. Louis Elliott of Rialto, formerly of Kinky Machine, and bloody axe wielder for Grace Ruddy Jones. I mean, what a gig. Standing there, getting to watch Grace hula hooping and just looking like the absolute queen constantly. Very jealous of that. What a lovely, lovely guy Louis was. Really great to hear somebody talk about the club smashing as well. And it was the first time that people have mentioned some sort of rare groove and stuff, which was great. I don't think we've had Curtis Mayfield chosen before on this pod, so always love to chat about Curtis Mayfield. So huge thanks for Louis. Go click the link in the socials or in the show notes to go and explore the playlist. It's up on Spotify, so you can go and listen to that, and it's got all your Rialto greats on there, and alongside that it's got all of Louis's picks. So thanks once again to Louis. Thanks again to you lot for listening. Go explore that back catalogue if you haven't done already. Hundreds and hundreds of episodes. And if you're feeling like you really enjoyed that, then why not head over to patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack and get some more content and show your love and appreciation by signing up for a month for $1. Other than that, in the show notes, there's a link to something called Buy Me a Coffee. I like coffee, so you can buy me a cup of coffee if you want. It's simple. Thanks again. Much love. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.